Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we have a fantastic program. We have the honor and privilege of Harav HaMashgiach, Harav Reuven Lechter, a Talmud Muvik of Reb Shlomo Volba, one of the biggest Balei Musar in Eretz Yisrael. He's written Svarim on Tshuva, Tefillah. He's a sought-after speaker. He speaks very often at Ner Le'elef, and he's going to speak about his shtadlus. When are we supposed to be mishtadl and betachin? And when are we supposed to have Betachin? I always like to start off with a small little vart. So let me just start you off with this thought. The entire Bereshis is about dysfunctional families, and I'm sure we all know a few. It starts off with Adam and his son, Cain and Hevel. One kills the other. Not good. Then we have Noach. And by Noach, he has a bunch of children. And what happens? One of them, Eved Avadim, one of them doesn't behave. He becomes a slave to the others. Chum becomes a slave, right? Not exactly. Quite a dystopian family. Who are the next siblings we see? Well, along the way, we see Avram has Yishmael and Yitzchak. What happens to Yishmael? Gareshus ben Amazais, excommunicated from the family. Exercised from the family. Then we have Esav and Yaakov. One tries to kill the other, promises to kill the other, right? At the end of Toldos, when can I kill my brother Yaakov? And then we have the Shvatim who try to sell Yosef, right? One dystopian story after the next. Only two brothers in the whole Bereshis that we see that don't get along. We see harmony. We see no conflagration between them. They get along well. Which two brothers are they? This is a riddle. And the answer is, this week's parsha, is Menashe and Ephraim. So let me share an amazing thought with you, right? What happens in this week's parsha? It says that Yaakov Avinu comes to bench. He comes to bless Ephraim and Menashe. And it says, Sikeles Yadav, he crosses his hands. And he puts his right hand, his weighty hand, the hand that you use for most, on the son of the younger one, which is Ephraim, and the left hand on Menashe, the Bechor, the older. And this is somewhat of a disrespect, obviously, to Menashe, and it's favoring Ephraim. And Yosef asks him, what is this? He says, this one will be much greater than that one. Now, Yosef, his whole life has struggled, He's been tormented with the fact that Yisrael of Yosef is Kabbana because of the favoritism that his father showed to him, right? The Gemara says, Bishvil Shnei Shkalim, because of the Ksainas Pasim, who are Yosef Mitzrayim, we went down to Egypt. And he's looking at this and he's saying, oh my goodness, what's happening here? And you know what Yosef says? He uncrosses his father's hands and he says, Loichein Avi, no, Papa. All this favoritism, all this kinna between brothers, it stops. It has to stop. How long will this hatred, how long could we live with jealousy between siblings, anger between siblings, families broken up with bachlekes, not coming to each other's simchas, having the worst thoughts about each other, saying the worst things about each other? How long could this go on? So he uncrosses his father's hands and he says, Leichein Avi, that's not how we do it. And with that statement, he undoes 2,000 years of dysfunctional families, of sin between brothers. And he changes the course of history forever because the next brothers we see are Moshe and Aaron. Moshe is the younger one, far more successful. And it says, Vayelech Aaron lekras Moshe Amidbara, full of love, even though his younger brother was greater. Because Yosef said, you know what, the fact that we've had dysfunction so long doesn't mean we have to continue to have dysfunction. Just because our parents didn't get along, just because we fought yesterday doesn't mean we have to fight today. We can undo, we can create, we can agree to uncross all those twisted wires and create, say, it's behind us. We've left it behind. And it's all love. I'm not going to show favoritism. And I want love between the brothers. I think that's just an amazing, amazing thought. And you know where else you see that? Yosef marries the daughter of Potiphera. Yeah, I have to apologize if I said this before. You know, it's hard for me to remember what I did and what I didn't. I'm human. But just imagine, Potiphera is the woman who framed him. And here he is. He's marrying the daughter. I mean, just imagine what Hanukkah dinner was like at their house. But what is it? Yosef has the ability to say, yesterday is yesterday, but from today we're moving forward in a positive direction. That's it. We're done with it. He uncrosses Loichein Avi, and he fixes it forever. And I think there's something so powerful in my life, maybe in yours. There's some sibling, somebody we disagree with, and it's already been this way for years, and we grew up and we changed and they did this and we did that, and there's a history and we could write a whole diary about it, but we have the opportunity. If Yosef could undo 2,000 years of dystopian, of dysfunction, we can certainly do it in our own lives. You're listening to Headlines, Contemporary Halachic Issues. You can listen to us Motzei Shabbos on WMCA 570 from 11 to 12, or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. Again, Motzei Shabbos from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. On Monday morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at NachumSiegel.com. Or now on Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 on WSNR 620 a.m. That's WSNR 620 a.m. Privilege of having with us on the phone from Yerushalayim Harav HaMashkiach Harav Rav Reuven Lechter, who is the Talmud Muvik of Harav HaMashkiach Rav Shlomo Volba, who's the Mechaber of Sfarim on Tshuva and Tefillah. He's the famous speaker of Ner Le'elef. Welcome, Rav Lechter.
Welcome.
So, Rabbi Lechter, we just read in the Torah a few weeks ago.
Now we can't speak freely, that's right?
We can speak freely, yes.
Good. So you ask your questions, yes.
Yes. So we had in the parasha a few weeks ago, we had about Reuven, about Yosef, Zachar Saramashkimes Yosef Ayishkacheyu. So and Rashi says over there, Asher Gever, Asher Sambashem Miftachai, that a person should. Yosef was criticized, seemingly, for being mishtadel. So a lot of people have asked questions based on this Rashi, and being that you are a Baal Machshava and Baal Musa, maybe you could tell us Be'ezer Derech Yishkener, and maybe respond to some of our questions. And here are some of the questions. How would you respond to a well-meaning parents who are pressuring a boy to leave yeshiva at the age of 21, so that he could pursue a career and, quote, learn how to support myself so that I don't become a burden on the community, end of quote. Now, that's clearly his shtadlus, and Yosef was criticized for it. So are we supposed to be mishtadl? Are we not supposed to be mishtadl? Give us some direction.
Okay, so I tried to give a direction. This is a very broad question, but I tried to give a direction based also on that Chazal on Yosef, yes. Yosef was criticized. But it is a good ishtadlus. You may have made ishtadlus. What is that criticizing? So the Baal Musa already say that the criticism was mainly that it was ishtadlus which was without hope. That means that al pisechel it wouldn't come out anything. So I want to explain that. I want to see how we can be Malamit Shchusun on Yeshiva Tzadik, but from the other side we'll understand what is the criticism. Look, when the Saramashkin went out into this new reality, which he was very much in the darkness, and even he dreamt about his good friend, which was the Sarah Oifin, that he will be killed. So for him, it was a real unclear future in front of him when you are in the prison by Potiphar in the prison there. So a very unclear future. And then suddenly, from one day to the other, by the birthday of Paroi, he just went up into this unbelievable fame and back into his job. So this change of environment is for sure not a good background to remember something which was in the darkness, a stranger, which he told you what will be with your dreams, but now your dreams became reality, and you're just out in this new reality. You will not remember what was then. It will not be on your mind. On your mind now will be your future and whatever will be with you, and you just lost your connection to your past. So that was like a thing which Yosef would have to think, that this is not a Seichodike Stadlis, because he will lose his Shikuladas, this Sharamashkim. Now, the Limutzchus on Yosef is that Yosef himself, when he out of an absolute desperate situation, without any blame and without any hope that someone would take him out, because he was a stranger, a flat-out stranger, you know, being from Eretz Yisrael, so there's no one even thinking about him in all of Egypt, that he should be taken out, that was absolutely unexpected. 2 years later, he was taken out in one day, standing in front of Paroi, and he didn't lose his Shikul Hadas, not for 1 second. So Yosef HaTzadik was like in his own situation, and in his own situation, he, from himself, couldn't fathom that someone would lose his clarity of mind when the surroundings is changing so drastically.
So you're saying it's good to make ishtadlus, but he made foolish ishtadlus? Is that the point of Yosef?
You have to understand, his foolish ishtadlus was in his eyes not foolish, because he would for sure remember. Only he would have to think that the Sar HaMashkim will not remember. That he would have to think into the mind of the other person and say, him he will not remember. He will not do that.
So
I would be taken out. I would for sure remember.
How do you weigh that? I mean, somebody's in jail and they beg somebody to remember them. Like, how do you draw the line between? He had nothing else he could do. He couldn't send a telegram or a fax or an email or a phone.
Yeah, but
this was the only thing he could do. So how do you weigh, like, it was foolish or not foolish?
Because most probably that won't help. Most probably that won't help. That is the cash. That's what they say. When you are desperate and you are lacking a bitochen, you are lacking that you're in good hands, when you're in despair, you're grabbing for every piece of grass in order to keep you up, even though the grass will come out. And this is a chisoron of bitochen. You don't grasp something which will not keep you up, you know? You don't do that.
So let's go to this boy. So should this boy...
No, 1 minute. I will try to answer. So you see, that first you have to decide what is the seichel of the question. That means in order to make a shtadlus or not a shtadlus, what's the seichel of the question? That is always the question. A lot of times people are sitting in a dark room, and they say it should be better or it should be different. Now, the question, what is the question? What do we want? When I would have such a situation of parents and a boy, I would ask the parents, what does it mean? That means, what is demanded? What does it mean that a boy has a parnosa? What does that mean? So they'll say, he will make money. Yeah, but why do people pay someone money? So the bottom line of why someone is paid money is that you are paid money because people need you. You can sell Timberland shoes, or when you want to say Bruno Magli shoes, whatever you want, in Zimbabwe. You won't make a parnosa because they go barefoot there. In Africa, in the savannah, you go barefoot. So you will not make a parnosa. You have the best item in the world, but that doesn't help to make a parnosa. To make a parnosa is that its item is needed from the community. Then you'll get paid. So when the parents ask the son that he should go for a parnosa, they ask him something which is not that has a certain seichel to it. That means it's not a demand which is an unmovable demand which says you have to go to university. No, you have to be involved in an endeavor which down the road people will need you. And now the parents say something very, very meaningful to that boy. They say, my good boy, we are not perceiving that down the road of your learning, you will be needed. And now the response from the boy has to be an intelligent response, because he has to understand his parents are not against him. They are with him. They are with him in the same boat. And they want that he should embark on an endeavor that he, in down the road, will be needed from the community. Absolutely legitimate. So now the boy has to make a freshman and reference think, really, where will I be needed? Where do I have kishoynes, which are kishoynes, which will be needed from the community? And then he has to think very thoroughly, where are these kishoynes? So it could be that he will find the kishoynes in the narrow area of learning only, or it will be in a melamdes, or it will be in a kirovachoytim, or in a rabbonis. And there are people which they are manually skilled, they are organizational skilled. So then they say, I will be needed from the community with my organizational skills. And then perhaps I will learn that. So the hishtadlus is always that it should have a seichel. But the seichel of the hishtadlus of parnosa means, where do I invest that I am needed? So that could be with the learning too. But this is what we have to first think, that we have to create a situation where there is a seichel insight. To go to university is absolute without seichel. Whenever you don't have a plan or an mindset that people will need you.
So you're saying don't go for a liberal arts degree. Go for medicine or something that could be used.
Yeah, but this is the question what you want. That or you go and say, tell your parents that you are going to learn in Teire because you feel that you will be needed in Teire. I did that myself. I was a mathematician, and my professors wanted me to be a mathematician. But I felt people will need me with my skills, which I have in Teire, even only in the beginning developed. But my parents definitely asked me to do that. My parents were not Haredi at all. They were not Frum. So they asked me these questions. And my response was not jihad. I now kill you, and I have bitochen, and it will be okay. No, I feel that I have certain character traits or certain intellectual traits, which within the Torah community is needed. I will go for that. And then people will need me, and in Yirtzeh Hashem, when people need me, I'll have a parnasa. Yeah? So this is always the question that you are responding. Understand that?
Yes, Rabbi Lechtel. So let me do a follow-up question. Here's a question, again, we got from a listener. I would love to become a Limode Kodesh teacher, and I feel I will be very good at it. But there's no way I could support a husband and koel on a teacher's salary. So what's more important, to be a koel wife or to be a mora?
So, okay, this is a very tricky question. It's a question we have to understand in this realm. There is another part coming in. So there's another part coming in that we have to understand what the structure of the family is. It depends in the area where she is a mora, where she is a mora. For example, I know people which live out of town, and to be a mora is a lifesaver for the community. And the husband is perhaps in a kol, but his job in the kol, where it is not as much lifesaver as the wife's. That happens once in a while. So those are questions which you can't make black and white. I only want to say on this point, I want to say one thing. There is a certain question of a structure of a family. I do not know how this thing is working in America. But I want to explain that to you with a marshal. When you have a family, my father was very much a collector of classical music. And we had LPs at home. You remember these things where
yes.
You can put it with a needle, yeah?
Yes.
So there was, yeah, I think he has 5,000 LPs. So I was able to learn, to listen a whole year straight classical music without going over anything. You know, it's a crazy thing. But we have one LP which the center was thrilled of center. The hole was thrilled of center. So I was young, and I thought, let's try to look whether I can listen to this music, which the hole is off center. I put the disc, this thing on the turntable, and I put the stick on the thing on it, and it didn't do anything because you can't do it. You can't listen to that thing. It has to be in the center. I looked at this, and I learned a very important lesson. I learned that an LP will make music when there is one point in the LP which doesn't move. But when the whole thing moves, you can't listen to the music. Yeah?
Right.
There has to be a central point which is still, doesn't move. And then the thing makes music. So I tell you, a family is like an LP. And the LP is that the LP turns around, that are the children, and they make music. Normally, the center of the LP is the mother. The mother is the center of the LP. And the father is the one which goes actively out. And he is not so needed at home. That was the normal mindset of a home. I am not telling you that the wife can't go to work, but she has to have a possibility to have a central point at home. Yeah? And the father is doing something which is a communal thing or is parnosa or whatever it is. So someone which has such a question, she has to think, my endeavor as a morah will, when my husband is, for example, a kolnik, and my husband is a kolnik, which is one of, I don't know, 500 or whatever, it depends when you are in Lakewood, when you are in another place, is one of 200, one of 20, and I am a morah and I'm exposed to the tzibur. Is that a good balance at home? She has to ask herself that, yeah? Is that a good balance? Or would it be more better not be a wife of a kolnik? Yeah? A wife of a kolnik. It would be, what is, how do you build a family? That's the first thing we have to think. Now, she's asking another question. She asks that I feel a mission to be a morah. So this mission as to be a morah has to be weighted in face of that, how the family will be built and things like this. That's a personal question. There's no cloistical thing. I understand that I am going into difficult territory, which means that how much do you give a place for the housewife to develop her own skills and not feeling the all of this whole supporting the family on her. Whether that's healthy, that's the all of the support of family is on her, and she has to do something which she's not happy, I don't think so. I don't think that it will be fruitful when she does something which she's not happy. So how to really deal with that, that's a very personal thing. I wanted to only give the general picture how a family is built, and she has to do that. She has to think about that, okay?
Yeah. Sir Avlach, let me ask you another question. What does the Ramban mean when he says that Avram Avinu was chayta? He sinned when he left Eretz Yisrael to go to Mitzrayim. Chet Chat Avram, was he supposed to starve and stay in Eretz Yisrael? What about his shtadlus?
I think, look, when you read the parsha, this is a question in the parsha. When you read the parshas and you speak what Avram Avinu, you have to understand when you say Avram Avinu, you don't say Avram, which historically was our forefather. That's not what it is. Avram Avinu means that the whole essence of this person is only understandable as a father of the nation. That's it. What the Torah tells about Avram Avinu is stories which are there told about the forefather of the nation. And forefather of the nation means someone which is establishing the level of the nation in a certain place. That's what the forefather means. He is giving the madrege ruchnis of his children. Now, by Avraham Avinu, there was the possibility to establish Klal Yisrael wherever you are. And Avraham Avinu had the possibility to establish Klal Yisrael in that realm that they do not have to go down to Eretz Yisrael, to Mitzrayim. Just imagine that when Avraham would not go down to Mitzrayim, then they would not be Maise of a Simon Labonim, and his children would not go down to Mitzrayim. That means Avraham Avinu would establish a cloudy soil which was such a high madrege that staying in Eretz Yisrael, they would be able to get Torah in Eretz Yisrael and come to the Tikkun without any golus.
But what about his shtadlus?
Yeah, but that would be this madrege. You can't judge that with his shtadlus. The chet choto is that he didn't put Klal Yisrael on this level, which would be living with the Bira Olam entirely without world, the way we are Olam Habo. They would reach Olam Habo straight.
But
Rav Lachta, ask Kishtadlis there.
But Rav Lachta, let's go to Yaakov. When Yaakov Avinu is by Lavan, and Rabbi Avram ben Rambam writes this, he says, you see, he worked very, very hard, right? He said, snow and ice covered me, and I didn't sleep. And then when Lavan runs after him, he says, he says, I was terrified of you, he says. And then he does his shtadlus for Parnassa. He runs to save himself. When Esav comes, he's just doiran tefila and melchami, prepares for war. He gives away, gifts, years and years of his work. Later on, when Yosef is in Mitzrayim and he wants Binyamin, he sends down Yehuda and he says, Kach mi zimras ha'aretz, light v'boitnim. He says umishne kesef, and then after he says v'kel shakai yitel charachmim. So Rashi says, I did everything I could. Now all that's left is to daven. So Yaakov he spends endless money. He spends endless effort. There's no end to the hishtadlus of Yaakov Avinu. And at the same time, we find by Avram, no, he's chayta because he's considered a chayta because he did his shtadlus,
yeah,
and Yosef is considered. So it's so unclear.
No. By Avraham Avinu, this chayt godel choto, it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be mishtadl in our realm. See, I want to explain to you that it's not a question of being nitzel or not. It's a question on which level to put klal Yisrael. So it's not a question of mishtadl. It's not the right.
But,
realm.
So then why wouldn't Yaakov then, when it comes to war with Esav, maybe he shouldn't be Mishtadl and put Klal Yisrael on a level where they never have to battle?
First at all, the Chazal say that Moshe Perozni Akelev, he was himself, when he sent the Doiran, he was himself making that Esav should be, why do you begin with that guy? Why they should just ignore him? That's what Chazal say. Yeah? They have a Taina, but we can't come with Tainas. But there is another thing, because their Klal Yisrael is already there. They are Shvotim there. And now you have to daige for them. Avraham didn't have to daige for anyone. It was the beginning. In the beginning, you establish the Madrege. After the thing is there, you have to care that it shouldn't go kaput, for sure. But Avraham didn't have to care for the Klal Yisrael, it shouldn't go kaput. There was no Klal Yisrael there by Avraham Avinu.
Let me ask you another question. Okay,
here.
I accept that. Let me ask you another question. In Eretz Yisrael today, a very current question. The settlers in Hebron, they say that the fulfilling a mitzvah by living in the dangerous areas of Eretz Yisrael, and sadly we see Nebuch, so many ritzichas over there, but they say they have betachin that Hashem will protect them. Is it a proper approach to put yourself in a place of danger and say you have betachin?
Chas v'shalom. That's also. I hold personally that's also. No, that's also. That's nonsense. Excuse me to tell you that.
But you find by Chizkiyo HaMelech, he says, I'll sleep in my bed and Rabbi Nishalem will fight for me. So
yeah.
why is that different than what they're doing in Hebron?
Because, no. But his skill went on the same thing. He should be Moshiach, that's right. And his home of Milchomedir was a question of whether that he will be Menatzeach, the Kirchas Hara, which are against the establishment of Moshiach. That was his Melech. Chmorin Sanderin says his Melech should be Moshiach. Only because he didn't say Shiro, then he wasn't Moshiach. And his Melech was aware of that. He didn't think that he's a private person. So Chizkiyo HaMelech said, in order to bring this clarity down, that the Klal Yisrael is helped from Bira Olam, which that's what Moshiach has to bring down this clarity, I will not do anything, because then this clarity will be revealed. That was what Yomelech said. But that was his job. His job was like Moshiach has to bring down the presence or the Siyata Dishmaya or whatever you want to call that from the Bara Olam to the Klal Yisrael, which this is not a question do I make ishtadlus or not. The question is, well, how do I show, Rabbi Yochanan says that, I think, how do I show that the Bara Olam is connected to me? David HaMelech said, I will go out and I will go with all of the kreches against the enemy. So David HaMelech was bigger in a certain way than Chizkiyahu, because David HaMelech said, I will go after the enemy with all of my army, and even though it will be absolutely recognizable that Hashem was saving us, there will be no even 1 millimeter of a mistake that Hashem saved us, even though I go with all of my ishtadlus.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Well, Rabbi Lefter, thank you very much. Can you give a bracha to the Olam in America?
I should give a bracha to the Olam in America. I'm not a bal bracha. There should be a slot of a tzloch and all the best things in America. But okay, whatever you want. Beseder. Okay.
Well, it's been a big honor to have you. Thank you so much. You're listening to Headlines, Contemporary Halachic Issues. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos on WMCA 570 from 11 to 12, or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. Again, Matzah Shabbos from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Or on Monday morning, if you missed it, on Monday morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at NachumSiegel.com. Or now, on Wednesday evening from 9 to 10 on WSNR 620 a.m. That's WSNR 620 a.m. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Shaul Klein, who's the director of Chush, which is a well-known organization that's been helping, doing incredible chassadim for our community for many years. It's an honor to have you with us. Welcome, Rabbi Klein.
It's my pleasure, and I just want to make a correction that I do a lot of work for Chush, but my title is not director. I have many hats. But I've done for 35 years a lot of work for them, including 10 years as a Rebbe on the front lines in the late 70s, early 80s.
So could you tell us, what is Chush, what is its mission statement, and what does it do?
To understand what Chush is and Bechlal, the hierarchy of special education, which I've been doing close to 40 years, we have to understand that Zelem Alam Zeh, it has a tier, it has a hierarchy. Now, very briefly and in a simplified way, is unfortunately those children on the lower rung, those who have severe autism or Down syndrome, they need a special setting, and their trajectory in life is b'derech hateva very different. Lamala Mazeh, there are children who have multiple issues. It's complex. It could be reading and attention and family dynamics abuse and combinations of thereof. And in order, they cannot exist in a regular school, including with help in the school of tutoring or resource rooms, which I'll explain shortly. So about 39 years ago, after the war, that we saw these children getting lost, this was set up a school which has many, many different professionals in different areas, all working together as teamwork, and including midikodesh, midichol, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, and so on, and all on the same page. And we found, through trial and error over many years, that this is the way to go for these type of children. And in addition to that, over the years, I've been setting up resource rooms, which all over the world, which is children who are in regular schools but have a severe one issue or one and a half issues or two issues. For instance, a child could be very bright but he's dyslexic, and and perhaps also ADHD, which has about a 49% comorbidity. And in order to deal with these children, they can be in regular classes, but we have to deal with their specific issues if they should have a future in these schools. And this is what I've been traveling the last 20 or so years all over the world to set up within normal children, so to say, and regular children, but they're not davening properly. They're not understanding the Pasuk Chumash. They're not spelling. They're not doing the math. And in order to do that, we really have to get something. And I was fortunate to have the schus of both traveling in many different geographic areas and Ashkafa areas. For instance, from 85 to 2007, I was the director of the resource room, the Hebrew Academy of Nassau County in Long Island, Hank, and for 22 years. And concurrently, I was also running a resource room, a large resource room, in Satmar in Williamsburg.
How many children are part of Chush?
On a given year, it could be close to 100 children, and some stay there many years, some stay shorter times. But over the 38, 39 years that we've been in existence, there are over 2,500 children have come and gone.
Is there anything you could tell the many parents who would listen to this? How do we... First of all, is there any type of preventative, you know, an ounce of prevention that parents could do so that their children do not become developmentally laggards? And post, give us a little bit of practical advice.
Okay. I've seen in my career, as I said, from many different stratas of our society, over 12,000 children, Bacharim, Yungalayit, who are struggling, were struggling. And one of the biggest tragedies that I constantly see yesterday and tomorrow from Lakewood, this is an ongoing process of children that you can say missed the boat because the parents did not address the problem when the children were young. And the success rate at that time could have been, according to our experience, over 90%. So they start doing this when they're 14 and 15. The children are moody. They've suffered all these years. They rebel. Some of them are halfway OTD. And the common denominator of what happened, the tragedy that happened, was that the parents felt, Mashiach hazman, le'asa haseichel. The biggest expert cannot do what time will heal all wounds. And perhaps there are certain things that time does heal. But most of the things with children who have learning or behavioral issues, if it is not addressed, it's like a mild infection that festers unaddressed, and then, chas v'sholom, it's impossible to deal with, or you deal with it in a different area of tzolos nefesh, is not really learning.
Yeah. So you're saying the first klal is, when you see a problem, address it immediately, and don't wait.
Yes, address it immediately, preferably by two or three different experts, but don't just put your head in the sand. Denial, you know, it's a river in Egypt, but it doesn't work in Chinuch.
Okay, that's just incredible advice. Give us some more.
Okay, the other thing that I noticed works very well. Maybe some people in Chinuch will never talk to me again, but people who generally go for a career in Chinuch, especially in special education, are sensitive people. They're not that hard-boiled people. They don't eat nails for breakfast. They have feelings and kedaima. And if a parent has an open and honest communication with the child's mechanchem or mechanchos and administrators, and I'm not talking only Chanukah geld or Purim geld or Chodesh geld, you know, that helps, of course. But this specific idea is one of the most powerful ideas I know because I use it for my children, and the advice that I gave to hundreds of people, this advice, the feedback that I get was incredible, is sit down on a Matzah Shabbos if you have a struggling child, or if not, it doesn't really matter, even if you have a brilliant child. You sit down when the kids are sleeping, and you think, what did my child's Mora or Rebbe do this week that was specific to my child, that was above and beyond the call of duty, and that I really appreciated, and I may have forgotten it in the hustle and bustle of the week. Let me think. And then you write it down in a few sentences, a paragraph or two. For instance, my son, Moshe, told me that when you gave out the homework before they went on the bus, you took 3 minutes to explain the homework to my Moshe because he has difficulty reading it. And we really appreciate that.
Hakaras HaTov, to show the Rebbe that you care.
Show the Rebbe in writing. You know, put it in writing, that old saying.
You know, it's baltashchis to have somebody like you and not get a few more, you know, ideas
okay.
out of.
Yeah, okay. I'll many times, whether the reasons are economic or whether the reasons are a parent feels that they'll be a better parent if they fix the problem where the child is struggling. So what really happens in the real world, unfortunately, is that the child gains a bad teacher, a bad rabbi, and loses a good parent. There are the main job of a parent, of our parents, are to provide for the child a loving and a nurturing environment, unconditional love, meaning even if he's a dummy, even if he struggles, even if he gets a 50 on every test, the child has to feel, and 65% of human communication is nonverbal. It is the gestures, it is the facial expressions, it is the eyes, the way they look. And if a child feels that he doesn't measure up, he's not a real child for these parents, it is devastating in the long run. And mida tova meruba, if the child feels, and it's instituted in the house, that there's a separation of education and being a good Yiddish kind, that we love you, you're our child, that is non-negotiable, whatever happens. Then we deal with this thing that matters or doesn't matter, try to make you a learning success or not learning success. But this is not such a big issue.
So give us, what's the fourth piece of advice?
Okay, for the fifth I start charging, right?
Okay.
Okay, the other advice that I've seen is in family dynamics. A child is, of course, part of a family. That's where he belongs. That's where he references himself. That's where the world references him. And many times I've seen a child that is disabled in any way, whether it's emotionally or physically or a combination thereof. And it's a subtle thing that they'll walk in the street and you can see that this child is left back. This child is walking two paces behind, like an untouchable in India. This is something that bothers me many years. And when I speak to parents, I've told the parents that the opposite has to be done with seichel. You cannot make the child a nebuch case and patronize him by the Shabbos table or in the family dynamics, but to have him, integrate him into the family. He's part of the family, and he has whatever he can do, he has to do.
So I'm going to just give a chazara sashir here. Number one, nip it in the bud.
Wow, yeah.
Number two, write a letter to the Rebbeim, find every week something worthwhile that the Rebbe did to thank him for, so that he realizes that the love that he gives is appreciated. Number three, as parents, unconditional love, notwithstanding the child's handicap, unrequited, unconditional love. And number four is integrate him into the family. Find clever ways to give him a sense of self-worth, and not that he's a miscarried kid who ended up here in the family. Those are the four pieces of advice that you would
Excellent.
Give.
Excellent. I couldn't have summarized it better.
So,
thank you.
Rabbi Klein, tell us one or two stories of where you feel that these, in your 40 years of chinuch, things that come to mind of where you've impacted children's lives and made a difference.
It is really very, very hard to select two.
I'm sure there are hundreds. I'm
sure
that if somebody like Rabbi Fran got a hold of you, they would write their next two books just off you. But give us one or two.
Yeah, I just want to preface this with, many times when I walk in Williamsburg for shopping with my wife, whatever, there are, being that I led that resource room for 5 years in the early 90s, the children who were there 10 years today are in the 30s, and some of Kanahara families, and I don't remember them, and it was a very large resource room there in Satmar, 400 children, boys and girls. And I walk there, and many of them just pull aside, stop their SUVs, walk out, and shake my hand, thank you.
That's beautiful.
That's that is so amazing. That is, I see he says his name, I don't remember, I don't know. But specifically certain stories which are, and I think that these two stories that I'll tell you is really the prat is Yoytze LaKlal. There are truly hundreds of these children in Chush and in other good places and resource rooms throughout the world, which is not only Hatzolos Nefoshes for the child themselves, but for his siblings, for his families, for his parents, for his grandparents. And just give you a very quick story, which took 4 years. Once in Chush, about 36 years ago, a mother, I think she was an almana, walked in and literally on a Sunday, there was no staff, deposited a child that says, Haresh Lach Lefanecho. He was kicked out of two or three schools. I don't want to send him to public school. We are Orthodox Eden, and I want him to be a Jew, and here he is, and that's it. And the board of directors got together and said, you know, so we're going to take him. It was very, very difficult, behaviorally, emotionally, learning-wise, whatever. But one of the things you do in every profession, you do it long enough, you find things, you find shortcuts, you find the combination, you find things that work. And we found things that over time, we found things, how to make it click, how to make him first to behave and then to pay attention. And we found, the psychologist found the certain things that bothered him, how his father died. And all of us worked together. To make a long story short, by his bar mitzvah, he was already in a top-notch high school with many tracks open for him in the modern Orthodox world, you know, in the professions. I think he went into either medical or eye surgery or ophthalmology. I'm not sure. But in that area, I lost track with him. A few years later, this must be about 20 years ago, I went on my brother lives in Muncie, has a nice house. I just decided to escape. No more special ed. This Shabbos, my wife, I went there. I just want to relax. And so I went to daven in a certain place, not a Hasidish place, out of the boondocks, you know, Yungalite. They don't know me. So I went into this koilel over there, this yeshivish koilel, and I sit in the back there, and they see me, and they say, I got an aliyah. As I'm standing there getting the aliyah, I look at the gabbai over there, and I look at his mannerisms, certain things that you don't outgrow. There's certain things, the way you move, the way, you know. And I look at him, then I look at his face, and I said, no. And then, yeah. So after davening, I didn't say a word. I said my brachas and you know, sat down. At the end of the davening, I went over to this gabbai and I told him, "Good Shabbos. Do we know each other?" He says, "Yes, but not here." So we went inside. He says, "I'm the gabbai of this koilel over here, and I learn in this koilel, and I want to show you something, Rabbi Klein. When I went through the difficult parts of my life, I know what it means." Struggle as a child. We have in this koilel a saganar. Leilani is somebody who's not, is blind. Yeah. But he's brilliant. He's a genius. And I want him to have every single sefer, rishonim and achronim, that is ever printed, so he can keep up with the most brilliant koilel yungaman here. But it's not available in Braille. You know, he only reads Braille. It's available shas and this, that. So I went, I found with the Jewish of Braille, and whatever, I gave them Pnei Yeshir, Shitabeke Betzes, Achroinim, and Shadot, everything in Braille. He went to the back of the storage room. He showed me shelves of Sfarim only for this younger man in Braille, because it takes up a lot of space. He says, I did it because I understand.
Amazing.
And life goes on. Baruch Hashem and Enikel was married the past summer.
Amazing.
And he came with his son-in-law. He married off one of his children, and he came and introduced his son-in-law this past August, when by the chassan of my Einikel. So this is a nutshell.
Beautiful story. Tell us one more.
Okay. In 2005, I went for the first time in South Africa to set up a resource room there. Without going to the community over there, exactly what it is, first of all, it's predominantly Bala Tshuva. And secondly, I was never ashamed of my own dedication to davening as I was over there. I saw Gedim and Bala Tshuva, how they daven Shabbos by Mincha, and me, Bimzik the Talmud, from Chassidish Yeshivas in Heilige Yidden, and this is how Vizazeichos. And they were mamasher. So, and anyway, but they're serious people, and Bechlal, the people, there's a lot of crime there, there's still, but the attitude of most of the people there, the Balabatim, it's such a Vadimkeit. It's not the New York stress that they go through. They have other stresses, but it's not the rush and it's not the impatience. So there's a lot of it. And I started training over there many people who are highly educated. There was a few women there who were graduates of Wit Watersrand School, which is the Harvard of South Africa. And they're very highly professional, and I showed them how we can adapt everything to Lamed Kodesh, and we started doing over the 10 years, hundreds of children in the community were helped. including some very serious cases with autistic and whatever was held beyond belief. But the first two customers, you know, like somebody has a store, he hangs up his first dollar right there next to the register because of chashivus. So it's the same thing. The first two customers that one of the first trainees had were, let's call them Reuven and Shimon. And Reuven was a very quiet kid, and he didn't care. You know, he's laid back. He's 10 years old, doesn't know Apostle Chumash, so what? You know, life is good anyway. He has the latest Game Boys 10 years ago. And the Shimon over there was hyper, ADHD, and dyslexic, and difficult to control, in addition to the learning. We started off with them at the time. Reuven, who was a quieter kid, by the time he was 12 and a half years old, he was flying. He started having a time in learning. And when I came back, he was 13 or 14 years old, this Reuven, and one of the systems I have when I go there for about a week is that on Sunday afternoon, the parents of the children who are still in resource rooms meet with me, and we discuss the program and what our expectations are. If they have any issues, they discuss them. So I saw the parents of Reuven standing there on the side. They weren't really in line because they weren't scheduled, but they were standing and waiting till everybody left away. I wondered why, because he was already mainstreamed Reuven at that time while he was 14. So they stopped when everybody left. They came, both parents came, and they told me they're on the lawn in the cheder of Johannesburg, and they told me, we are just standing here. We want to tell you Hakara Satoiv, because, you know, our son is learning day and night. We are Balchuvas. I can't help him. I don't know the whole thing. But on Sunday morning, last Sunday morning, he says, he got up at 5 o'clock, and I told my son, Reuven, why are you getting up Sunday? It's like against the law, almost, to get up Sunday, 5 o'clock. He said, because Rabbi Orbach in our Sameach gave the Daf Yomi, and he sits by the Daf Yomi every day, and it was so interesting, and they left off in the middle of an Inyan, and I really want to see how it turns out. So I'm going there. So I found out that this 13, 14-year-old boy daily sits at 5:30, 6 o'clock, with a Baal Batim and learning the Daf Yomi.
That's beautiful. And
in addition to that, so now I went there last August, in 2014, I met people there, and one of the Rebbeim there told me, I want to tell you a story. There's so-and-so is a Zokain, and he's an old Rosh Hashiva. He's not so active, but he's still learning there. And he has a Chavrus, he knew the Chazanish. He's a Talmud of the Chazanish. And he has a minig that he chazes kodshim every zman with one genius bacher. He picks out from the large yeshiva, I won't mention which yeshiva, a well-known yeshiva there, Gedola in Yerushalayim, and he picks out one ilui, and with him he does all of kodshim, Yisofim Leikitura. And guess who he picked up? This Reuven last year was sitting in a chabura with this well-known, internationally well-known Rosh Hashiva, learning with him Kutchim.
Wow, that was one of your boys.
That was the first Talmud in Johannesburg Cheder resource rooms in the summer, or for them it's the winter, in August 2005.
That's amazing. Well, yeah. Rabbi Klein, Rabbi Nishalom should give you kayach to continue for another 40 years.
Oh, man.
And to set up another 50 rooms. And the only reason you should stop is when you go out of business, that there's no more need for it.
Amen.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing what you do.
Okay.
Cult of all the best.
Good night.
So that was really just an amazing interview with a person, a tzaddik, and you see what difference a person could make in the world, fixing so many broken kelim and making them whole. Mamashak Shviris HaKelim, making it whole and having them learning with the Talmidim and the Chazan. It's just an amazing, inspiring person. You know, two Rashis in Bereishis that seem to be a little bit of a problematic. It says in Vayishvach, it says, Vayeovik Ish Imai, when Yaakov struggled with the Sarei Shalom. So Rashi says, who is this person he was doing battling with? Rashi says, Sarei Shal Esav Ish, Vayeovik Ish, the evil angel, the devil, the archangel of Esav. Okay, Ish means the bad angel. In Vayeshev, it says, by Yosef, when he's lost, V'yimtze'eyu Ish, V'netoyah b'derech, Yosef is lost. V'yishaleyu ha'ish, lemer, a man finds him and asks him, Matzavak ish, what do you need? So Rashi says, who's this ish? Who's this angel? Gavriel. Well, well. How does Rashi know that the first time it says ish, it's the evil angel, right? It's the Faustian devil. And the second time, it's Vayimtse'eyu ish, it's not Mephistopheles, but it's Gavriel. So I heard a beautiful Torah. It says like this. The first time Yaakov is vulnerable, he's at night, he's alone, it's late, everybody's on the other side, he's exhausted, right? And what happens? Somebody finds him, an ish, vayavik ishime. And what does the person do at his time of vulnerability? He tries to hurt him. Rashi says, you know who tries to hurt you? When you're vulnerable and you need a hand and somebody tries to hurt you, you know who that ish is? That's Sarishal Esav. That's the devil. That's the archangel of Esav. On the other hand, Yosef is also lost in the field. And somebody finds him and he says, how can I help you? Also vulnerable, alone, young, lost. Over there, what does Rashi say is? It's Gavriel. What is, you know how you define if a person is a Sarishal Esav or a Gavriel? When you're down, when you're out, and you need help, what does that person come to do? Take advantage, hurt you, push you, or lend you a hand? If that person lends you a hand, then guess what? That means that person is Gavriel. So all these souls that need help, when we have a tzaddik like Rabbi Klein, who spent 40 years in grace of kavod hatanish from them, right? And, you know, you don't get shishi and shlishi, and you don't sit ibanon by the knesset, and doing so, you know what Rashi would say on him? He is Gavriel. Next week, we have such a fabulous guest. We have an einikel of the Beis Halevi, an einikel of Reb Chaim Briska, a brilliant lamdan and a goyin, Rabbi Moshe Meiselman, tackling an extremely difficult and sensitive topic, science and halacha. I look forward to speaking to you then. This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio.